Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. On the show today, we hear from Ashley Thompson, Pete Musto, and Kelly Jean Kelly. Later, Ann Ball brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. Shep O'Neill tells the final part of Benito Cereno. But first,
many Americans are remembering the Woodstock Music Festival, which took place 50 years ago this week. Hundreds of thousands of people traveled to New York's farm country for the event. Some of those attending drove there by car and then walked on foot. Others arrived by helicopter. The attendees danced at sunrise on a wet hillside and tried hard to avoid heavy rainfall. They slept little, called their parents to tell them they were safe, and stood in wonder at the total number of festival goers. By the show's end, the attendees left behind wet clothes, bedding, and other belongings. But they also gained a sense of community from having been part of one of the most famous events in American music history. Woodstock took place about 130 kilometers northwest of New York City on land owned by farmer Max Yasger. Some of the most popular and influential musicians of that period performed for the crowd. But the lasting story of Woodstock is that over 400,000 people came to the farm and lived there for 4 days without causing a disaster. 50 years later, memories of the wild weekend remain strong among people who were there to watch and those who came to perform.
One of the more common memories attendees share is how difficult it was to get to the festival. Eileen Marder was 18 years old in the summer of 1969. She traveled to the show from her home in New York City. She told the Associated Press that people were leaving their cars in the middle of the road and walking to the festival. Many just refused to wait in line. There was an immediate sense that something was happening that never happened before, she said. Singer Nancy Nevin's band, Sweetwater, was supposed to be the opening act at Woodstock, but got caught in traffic. Luckily, the group was able to find someone working the event who provided a faster method of transportation, a helicopter. Nevin remembers the first time she saw the crowd from above. "It didn't even look like a crowd," she said. "It didn't even look like people. It was a big spread, multicolored, as far as you can see." Kevin Radin was also 18 at the time, but lived in the Hudson River Valley. He said that everywhere people were smiling and everything felt peaceful.
"I can't describe it, except to say that the hillside was just like a waterfall of love," Radin said. "It's like I'm not alone. There are other people out there that think like me, dress like me, look like me, and live like me." David Crosby, of the musical group Crosby, Stills, and Nash, remembers the behavior of individuals he saw when he was not performing. He says the sight of people sharing food gave him hope. This was especially important, he said, because it was just a year after the assassinations of Senator Robert F. Kennedy and civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. President John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy's brother, had been killed 6 years earlier. In addition, the United States was also several years into the Vietnam War. There is the significant thing, said Crosby, remembering Woodstock. For a minute, we were hopeful. For a minute, we were behaving like decent human beings. Even with the peaceful nature of the festival, little went as planned. At first, it was meant to be an event that people had to pay to attend. But fences came down, and the show became free. The concert ran later than expected. Food was hard to find, and it rained. Lighting director Chip Monk was told by Woodstock organizer Michael Lang that he had an extra job, hosting the show. The organizers had forgotten to pay someone to do so. Michael just said, "Oh, by the way, you're it, because you don't have anything to do in the daytime," Monk remembered. Jorma Kaukonen and his band, Jefferson Airplane, arrived Saturday and were to perform that night. They ended up playing on Sunday. Ted Newman, then a college student, said, "It was just one act after another. Just talking to each other in the field and saying, 'Well, it can't get any better than that.' And then the next thing seemed even better."
More than 30 acts performed, and a few had career-defining events. But as the concert ran into Monday morning, many missed what would become widely considered one of guitar player Jimi Hendrix's best performances ever. Photographer Henry Diltz remembers it well. "I woke up Monday morning to, 'Ladies and gentlemen, Jimi Hendrix,'" he said. "When he played the Star Spangled Banner, I remember my first thought was, 'Why is he playing that?' That's the song of the government that we hate for trying to send us off to war. That's their song. No, wait a minute. That's our song. He's reclaiming it for us." It went out from these huge speakers, and it echoed against the hillside because many people had left. Everyone was standing there with their mouths open. The people who left behind a dirty, worn hillside knew they had been part of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Max Yazger, the farmer who owned the land where Woodstock took place, died in 1973. Mary Miller is one of his relatives. She says the festival changed him in many ways. "He became more reflective, and because he became more known, people would reach out to him to reunite families, kids that had run away, things like that," she said. "He spent his last years doing a lot of that." Kevin Radin says he found a sense of meaning at the festival. "I knew everything was gonna be all right, no matter what I did or where I was going to go," he said. "It wasn't just my long hair or the clothes that I wore. It was something in my soul that I connected with other people. It's a memory that I have, and the older I get, things fade. But that feeling inside me has not left me. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Time is a long, 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 long time before the dawn.
Greenland, the self-ruling territory of Denmark, told the United States Friday, "We are open for business, not for sale." Greenland's foreign minister dismissed the idea of Denmark selling the territory. One day earlier, the Wall Street Journal reported that U.S. President Donald Trump had spoken with his advisors about possibly buying the world's biggest island. The newspaper reported that Trump repeatedly expressed interest in buying Greenland. He even asked the White House counsel to explore the idea. The report surfaced ahead of Trump's planned visit to Denmark in September. He is set to meet with the prime ministers of Denmark and Greenland. The journal said that the planned visit is unrelated to the idea of buying Greenland. Some Danish politicians have laughed at the idea. "It has to be an April Fool's joke," wrote former Prime Minister Lars Loki Rasmussen. His comments appeared on Twitter. Another politician, Soren Espersen, told Danish broadcaster DR, "If he is truly contemplating this, then this is final proof that he has gone mad." Espersen added, "The thought of Denmark selling 50,000 citizens to the United States is completely ridiculous." But in 1917, Denmark did sell a group of islands in the Caribbean to the U.S. government for $25 million. The islands are now known as the U.S. Virgin Islands. As for Greenland, U.S. President Harry Truman offered to buy the resource-rich island in 1946 for $100 million. Denmark refused the offer. The U.S. government also had no success in trying to buy Greenland and neighboring Iceland back in 1867. The United States and other world powers are showing increasing interest in Greenland because of its location near the Arctic Circle. Last May, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo warned that Russia's and China's actions in the Arctic had to be watched closely. 80% of Greenland's 2.2 million square kilometers is covered by ice. The island is home to about 57,000 people. They live along the coast. The economy depends largely on exports of shrimp and fish and aid from the government of Denmark. Under a 1951 defense treaty with the United States and Denmark, the U.S. military operates Thule Air Base in Greenland. The base houses a radar station that is part of a missile defense system. Last year, Denmark decided to help build two new airports in Greenland to prevent China from investing in the island. Martin Lidegaard is a former Danish foreign minister. He told the Reuters news agency, "What we can take seriously is that the U.S. stakes and interest in the Arctic is significantly on the rise, and they want a much bigger influence." I'm Ashley Thompson.
This week, we answer a question from Leandro in Brazil. He writes, "I would like to know, what's the difference between the words certificated and certified?" Dear Leandro, let's start with the second one, certified. As a past tense verb, it means to have said officially that something is true or correct. For example, let's say a couple in the United States got married legally. Officials had to confirm when, where, and with whom the wedding took place. In other words, the government certified the marriage. Certified can also be an adjective. It means someone is officially qualified to do a specific type of work. For example, imagine you have a problem with your kitchen sink. Water is pouring onto the floor. Neither your neighbor nor your cousin can fix it. You will need to call someone certified to do the work. Here is what you can say. I have a serious problem. I need a certified plumber to fix my sink. Or, please send someone certified to fix kitchen sinks. In these examples, certified is an adjective describing a kind of person. When your certified plumber arrives, he might even show you a certificate to prove his qualifications. A certificate is the noun form of certify. It is often a piece of paper that shows a person completed classes or passed a test. Now to certificated. This is also an adjective form of the word certify, but it is used mostly in British English. Here is an example. Jane is a certificated teacher. In American English, we would just say that Jane is a certified teacher. Both words mean that Jane has the official qualifications to do the job. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
Today, we complete the story Benito Sereno, written by Herman Melville. As we told you in earlier parts of our story, rebel slaves seized the ship San Dominic off the coast of Chile. They killed many of its officers and crew. The captain, Benito Sereno, was ordered to sail to Senegal. But first, he was forced to take the ship to the lonely island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. There, it could safely get water and supplies for the long, dangerous voyage to Africa. At the island, the rebels were surprised and frightened when they found an American ship anchored in the harbor. It also had stopped for water. Many of the rebels wanted to sail away, but their leader, Babo, opposed it. Now, here is Shep O'Neill with the rest of our story, Benito Sereno.
Captain Delano went down to Captain Sereno's cabin to cheer him up and say goodbye. "Better and better, Don Benito," he said as he entered the cabin. "Your troubles will soon be over." The American invited the Spanish captain to come aboard his boat for a cup of coffee. Sereno's eyes brightened, but then the light in them died. He shook his head and said he could not accept the invitation. Captain Delano was offended. He was about to withdraw when Don Benito rose from his chair and took Delano's hand. The Spaniard's hand shook, and he was too excited to speak. Delano pulled his hand away and turned, climbing back to the deck. His face was troubled. Captain Delano could not understand Don Benito's actions. One minute, the Spaniard was warm and polite. Then, just as quickly, cold and hostile. Captain Delano asked himself, "Why did he refuse to join me? Why is he so unfriendly?" Captain Delano got to the deck and was about to step down into his boat when he heard his name. To his surprise, Don Benito was calling, coming quickly toward him. Captain Delano was pleased and turned back to meet him. Don Benito warmly took his hand with more energy and emotion than he had ever shown. But his excitement seemed too much for him, and he could not speak. Babo then came between the two men and put his arm around Don Benito to support him. Clearly, he wanted to end the meeting between the two captains. Walking between the two men, Babo went with them to the walkway. Don Benito would not let go of Captain Delano's hand. He held it tightly across his servant's body. Soon, they were standing by the ship's side, looking down into the American boat. Its crew turned up their wondering eyes. Captain Delano did not know what to do as he waited for Don Benito to let go of his hand. He wanted to step down into his boat, but Don Benito still firmly held his hand. Then, in an excited voice, the Spaniard said, "I can go no further. Here I must say goodbye. Farewell, my dear, dear Don Amasa. Go, go," and he tore his hand loose. "Go, and God protect you better than he did me. Go, Don Amasa, my best friend." Captain Delano was deeply moved. He would have stayed for another minute or so, but he caught the eye of Babo. It seemed to say, "This is bad for Don Benito's health." And so he quickly took the short step down into his boat with the continuing farewells of Don Benito, who stood rooted at the ship's side. Captain Delano sat down in the back of his boat, gave Don Benito a last salute, and ordered his men to push off. The boat began to move. Suddenly, Don Benito sprang over the side and came down at Delano's feet, and he kept shouting toward the Spanish ship. His cries were so wild that no one could understand him. An American officer asked, "What does this mean?" Captain Delano turned a cold smile upon Captain Sereno and said he neither knew nor cared. "It seems," he added, "that the Spaniard has taken it into his head to give his people the idea that we want to kidnap him. Or else," and suddenly Captain Delano shouted, "Watch out for your lives." He saw Babo, the servant, on the rail above with a dagger in his hand. He was ready to jump. What followed happened so quickly that Captain Delano could not tell one incident from another. They all came together in one great blur of violent action and excitement. As Babo came down, Captain Delano flung Don Benito aside and caught the rebel leader, pulling the dagger from his hand. He pushed Babo firmly down in the bottom of the boat, which now began to pick up speed. Then Babo, with his one free hand, pulled a second dagger from his clothes and struck at Captain Sereno. Captain Delano knocked it from his hand. Now he saw everything clearly. Babo had leaped into the whaleboat, not to kill him, but to kill Captain Sereno. For the first time, he understood the mysterious behavior of Don Benito, a prisoner under sentence of death. He looked back at the Spanish ship and got a clear picture of what its captain had escaped. On board the San Dominique, the shouting rebels were raising their axes and knives in a wild revolt. They stopped some of the Spanish sailors from jumping into the sea. A few, however, jumped, while two or three who were not quick enough went hurrying up the topmost wood arms. Captain Delano signaled to his ship, ordering it to get its guns ready. When the whale boat reached his ship, Captain Delano asked for ropes. He tied Babo and had him pulled up on deck. A small boat was quickly sent out to pick up three Spanish sailors who had jumped from Captain Sereno's ship. Captain Delano asked Don Benito what guns the rebels had. He answered that they had none that could be used. In the first days of the rebellion, a cabin passenger, now dead, had destroyed the few guns there were. The Americans fired six shots at the San Dominique, but the rebel ship moved out of reach. Small boats were armed and lowered. Captain Delano ordered his men into them, and they moved out to capture the rebel ship. The boats caught up with the San Dominique when it was nearly night. But the moon was rising, and the gunners were able to see where they were shooting. The rebels had no bullets, and they could do nothing but yell. Many of the rebels were killed, and the San Dominique was captured. After an investigation, Babo was found guilty of stealing a ship and of murder, and was hanged. Captain Benito Sereno never was well again, and he soon died. So ended the terrible story of the slave revolt aboard the slave ship, the San Dominique.
That's our show for today, but we'll be back tomorrow. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.